Welcome to the Check Your Head podcast, the podcast where notable musicians and experts come and share their stories and solutions for mental health and wellness. I'm your host, Mari Fong, a music journalist and life coach for musicians, and today I'm excited to tell you about the Check Your Head podcast's YouTube channel. What makes our channel special is we drop raw, unedited interviews we call naked interviews that include unexpected behind-the-scenes moments and bloopers with the musicians featured on the Check Your Head podcast. And coming soon is our expert series on YouTube, where interviews with our mental health experts will provide an educational series that you don't want to miss. To find us on YouTube, simply search for Check Your Head Podcast, and while you're there, please subscribe to our channel so you'll be the first to know when a new episode drops. Now to our featured guests. Today we have an up-and-coming singer-songwriter who hails from Sweden and first landed on the Billboard charts as a featured artist on the Chainsmokers' hit single, Hope. Our musical guest today is Wynonna Oak, Atlantic Records' rising star who dropped her She EP in 2020 and was also featured on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Wynonna Oak recently dropped a new single entitled Old Insecurities, which we'll be playing a clip of later in our episode. Wynonna often shares open, honest lyrics about her anxiety and her mental health in her music, and is just as open and honest with her story today on living with anxiety and panic attacks, along with her solutions. Next, our mental health expert is an Emmy Award-winning composer, a multi-platinum-selling producer, a USC professor, and author of the book, In Tune, Music as a Bridge to Mindfulness. Richard Wolff, also known as Wolfie, is our expert today, who has worked on projects with musical icons such as Prince, Freddie Mercury of Queen, and Madonna, as well as working on countless TV and film soundtracks. Today, Richard Wolff will explain how music, mindfulness, and meditation can be a natural and effective way to reduce anxiety and bring calm to your life. But first, let's hear artist Wynonna Oak share her story. Congratulations on the She EP. I really love the fact that it's based on being strong as a woman and also quite a few other messages in your lyrics and within your songs. And you do speak out on mental health, which I really appreciate, both in your interviews and your lyrics. But I was wondering, can you tell me when or at what age you first realized the importance of mental health?
For me, I've always been a very sensitive person. Even as a kid, I was hypersensitive. I think I had my first panic attack when I was 12. Mm. So I realized pretty early how fragile we are as human beings and how important it is to find balance and find peace within yourself. I still haven't found that missing piece really, but I've been trying my best and I've come so far.
At 12 years old, a lot of musicians that come across mood disorders like panic attacks, it usually does start in the early teens. Even in elementary school, can you describe what it was like when you first experienced a panic attack at 12 years old?
For me, I was super scared. I thought I was about to die. I thought I was going to lose my mind. So I had no idea and I was so scared. And then it happened again. And I told my parents about it and they were like, okay, we think you're having a panic attack. You're not dying, you know, it's normal. You will get through this. And then it was a couple years when it was better. And then it came back as I went through like other stuff in my life, like the worst time for my panic attacks and my anxiety. It was like a couple years ago and I woke up every day feeling it. Like I basically woke up with a panic attack and I couldn't even go to like grocery store. I couldn't do anything.
So you were kind of agoraphobic too, because you were staying at home and you weren't going out as much because of the panic attacks.
Yeah, for me, it was a time in my life when I can't even go to the grocery store because I feel like ground beneath my feet is shaking. It felt like I was on a ferry constantly, like on a boat. And that's pretty scary. it gets so real when you don't really see the difference between reality and what's in your mind. And you think you're losing your mind. It's so scary. The body and mind is so connected.
Yeah, it is true. It is scary and confusing when you're going through these behaviors and thoughts that you don't even understand. You might even feel like, gosh, this is not even my personality. Why am I thinking these thoughts? But they come, right? What were some of the thoughts that you were thinking that didn't even make sense to you?
Oh, so many thoughts. You know, the worst part was I felt like, is there an earthquake going on or is the ground shaking beneath my feet? Why do I feel the ground is constantly moving? And just not being able to trust yourself. Like, why can I not breathe? Is there something wrong with me? Like, constantly having that fear of, oh, maybe this time it's something serious. Oh, this time could be different. What if I'm actually having a heart attack this time? Because I feel that pain in my chest. Or I feel like you're just losing trust in yourself.
And it would come out of nowhere. Or was there certain triggers that would, you know, that would spiral you into this panic attack?
Some things for me are triggering because I have specific trauma that can be triggering for me, but it could also just come out of the blue. That's how your brain works. Your brain is smart and is constantly finding new things to like, oh, she's having a good time. Let's just make her suffocate on this beautiful dinner. Put some clouds over her head. No, but I don't know. It's a lot of different things, but it could basically just come out of the blue. Also, I noticed there can be a big difference in my mental health that's connected to my cycle, to my menstrual cycle. So, you know, I'm so sensitive when I have a PMS or during my period, I get super sensitive, like even more fragile because all of the hormones are already messing with your head. So,
yeah, that was actually something that I'm really sensitive to. And I've fallen into depression and anxiety because of my hormonal shifts. And it took me a while to realize that, but it's amazing how much hormones can affect you in general. But it's tough because it's something that you really can't control so much, but it does, you know, happen. And then all of a sudden you're like, my gosh, why am I reacting so strongly to this one comment?
Yeah. And it took me so long to realize because I started to track my worst anxiety days and I saw, oh, there's a pattern here, you know. And I still, whenever I'm having PMS or during my period, the days after, I get so sensitive and I feel I have shortness of breath and that triggers things. Then I feel, damn, am I falling back into this depression hole again? Or what is going on? And then I'm like, okay, let's just relax and see. And then I feel better, you know.
Right. You start to reassure yourself instead of going down the bad road of thoughts. But there are PMS, premenstrual symptoms, people are familiar with it. But there are different times in life where there's big hormonal shifts. You know, for men and women, there's puberty. That's a big one. There's also menopause that comes later in life. And then after you have a baby, there's the post-baby blues that can happen. So it's this sort of ever-changing estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, all of these hormones that kind of work together, but sometimes can work against you.
Yeah, they can. We don't really talk about that enough because there's not enough research on women's health. So it's hard because when there's not enough research, we won't ever find that help that we need. Because there's not really a cure for it. So it's a bad spiral, but I'm hoping to see more science around it. And because there's so much that we can do for women's health.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like if there's a correlation between emotions and your hormones for men and women, that it really should be looked at because there can be things done as long as science supports it and focuses on it. You know, one thing you mentioned that I thought was really interesting is that you were tracking your symptoms and tracking how you feel throughout your day or throughout the month. What is it that you do there?
Yeah, I just started seeing a pattern in my cycle. I started to see that it's something with the hormones that's totally changing that makes me feel like I can't breathe. And if I know that prehand, okay, these days I'm going to have trouble breathing, then I don't have to get panic attacks or get as scared as I used to. And if I know that beforehand, I can learn to be like, okay, these days maybe I shouldn't plan something big.
Well, that's actually really smart. It's like you're journaling how you feel throughout the month according to your cycle. And to see a trend, then at least you can prepare yourself, right?
Yeah.
You know, one thing you said was a few years ago, you had more severe anxiety and panic attacks. Was there anyone there that you relied on to help you? Or who was that and what was going on there?
My boyfriend was there for me the entire time. He was so supportive and he wasn't judging me or anything. He was just there for me and my family and my friends. I would call my dad as soon as I had a really bad anxiety attack, and my mom all the time. Just to hear her voice would calm me down a lot. So I had a really great support from my family and friends and people around me. But my boyfriend had to take a lot of, you know, maybe I should go to the hospital because I'm having a heart attack, you know. And he's like, well, maybe we should just chill a little bit. And I was like, no, I'm pretty sure. And then you start Googling and that's not something you should do. But yeah, I'm definitely having a heart attack. And I didn't, of course. Yeah, I'm also hypochondriac, so it's kind of funny, but it's hard because you get so limited when you're not even able to socialize with people, because I couldn't barely move from the couch to the kitchen without feeling like a fairy underneath my feet. And I was constantly having shortness of breath and getting so dizzy and had to lay down.
If you go into a panic attack, how long does it normally last?
During that time, it could go on for hours. And I could have them every day. I could wake up with a panic attack and it could go on for hours. But now it can be, honestly, it can be a short one that I'm able to control through my breath technique and trying to calm myself down and break it before it hits hard. So that could be maybe 20 minutes, or it could be something that I can't control and I can wake up with a panic attack and that feeling can go on for maybe 2 hours.
Oh, wow. And that's a long time.
Yeah.
I haven't had a panic attack, but I know a lot of musicians do. We've had quite a few musicians that come on the podcast talking about them. And some of them even say that they get disconnected from reality. They could see themselves on stage as a separate person, all kinds of different things that happen. But it really does sound terrifying. And throughout the years, I'm sure you've thought of ways on your own and also asked a professional, what do I do in these situations? What have you learned that has worked best for you to help control the anxiety and the panic attacks?
One thing that helped me is that I saw the pattern in my cycle and that I can prepare myself for the days when I know that I'm going to feel low. And I know people hate to hear this, but actually to do yoga and meditation. I know that's one of the things you don't want to hear when you're going through something super hard. It's like, oh, go for a run. You know, that's not something you want to hear. But actually getting those endorphins and the serotonin in your brain to kick off a little bit, it's going to help you a lot. So yoga and meditation has helped me a lot. And then you learn to breathe better and take deep breaths and just doing those kinds of breath techniques and yoga. It helped me. And also having a good therapist and keep telling myself that.
Well, it is important to have a good therapist. And you're talking about breathing techniques, which sounds really simple, but I've heard so much about how your breathing can really help slow down everything in your body. And that's what you need to do when you're panicking. Is that where you learned how to do these breathing techniques, with a therapist?
No, that was through meditation and yoga. So I learned that through doing yoga. There's a lot of breath techniques. Yoga is basically just reconnecting to your mind and to your soul and finding that connection that gets disconnected when you're having a panic attack or when you're experiencing anxiety and we experience traumas. You get disconnected from yourself. So you just find that connection and that love for yourself. And yoga won't help everyone who tries it, but for me, it helped.
I think it's important to share what really works for you, because sometimes natural things and ways to slow down our physical body and our mental, you know, our thoughts is going to help combat that. Now, when you talked about therapy, what have you found most beneficial with therapy?
I still need to go properly to therapy, actually. I'm still putting that on my to-do list in the drawer, but actually I want to try, I don't know if you heard about EMDR therapy. So I want to try that. Have you tried that?
I've not tried that, but I've heard that it works for some people. I have a good friend of mine who does that EMDR and has had good success with it. Sometimes therapies that don't sound like it would work, but you got to try anything and everything when you're in the middle of something that can be really terrifying, because you never know which one is really going to click for you.
Yeah, like I tried several people though, and I never really think that I found the right person. And that can also be hard because you keep telling them things and you open up and it's hard. It's so important to find a good therapist.
Yeah, it takes time to find one that has a personality that you feel you could trust, and also somebody that you feel is going to give you the skills or even the listening ability to give you the right advice for your condition. But you have a song, it's called The Light. And that one I've read, it's about being on the bottom and fighting your way back. Can you tell me about a time that represents that thought?
It's been several times in my life when I felt I almost wanted to give up because I couldn't see the light. It was just working against me, and even me, I was working against myself. And when you're feeling so trapped in those dark thoughts with all your demons, it's so hard to find the way back. But I wrote that song as a reminder that there is a way back, and I'm in so much better place than I was. You know, right now I still have things that I need to work on and that I need to deal with and that I haven't dealt with yet. But there's always that in life. You're always finding a way to become your full self and your full potential. But my mental health is in a completely different place right now. So,
well, you wrote the song She, which is an empowering song about being a woman and speaking your mind. How would you explain that as part of the chapter that you're in right now with your life?
I mean, yeah, like she's that unpolished side of yourself that just doesn't give a fuck. And I feel like I'm becoming more and more confident as a woman. Like when I'm looking at myself when I was younger, I wasn't able to speak my mind as much. I was always trying to be like a people pleaser, and it's still hard to be that person sometimes, but I'm trying to be okay with making people uncomfortable, and especially men, when you have to like not be quiet when I hear people talk about things. You know, when you enter a room and there's a conversation going, there's a specific vibe. I'm not afraid to be that person who makes them uncomfortable anymore. I used to be quiet and be like, oh, I shouldn't say anything. But now I'm like, what the fuck, you know?
That's really good. Can you think of an example of that? Like a recent example of when you've done something like that?
Yeah, definitely. When I was younger, seeing the young girl that they thought that they could shape. When you're so young, there will always be like wolves trying to get you, and always these older men in the business who sexualize young women, and they saw an opportunity to try to shape me into something that I didn't want to be. Whenever I see something similar, I know what I want and I know what I don't want to do. I'm in control over my own sexuality and what I want to do and who I want to be.
That's really good. I know that it does take time and experience to get that strength and bravery, especially when you're starting in an industry where you really don't, you don't know what the rules are, or you're confused yeah. by them. And then pretty soon you realize, well, I guess I could make my own rules for my own career. Yeah. So that must be a good feeling. You know, you talk a lot about love and relationships in your song. For instance, you have Lonely Hearts Club, you have Nobody Loves Me, all these different songs that speak about relationships. What have you learned about love from your past experiences?
I had some really bad experiences. For example, if you're seeing someone that doesn't prioritize you and someone who is very manipulative, I really learned what I deserve. Because there's been so many times in my life when I was just living by their rules and I wasn't even thinking about myself. I was just trying to please them. So I think I learned how to prioritize my own needs. And it was important for me to find that love for myself before I found my person. And right now I'm in a super healthy relationship with the love of my life.
So, oh, that's so sweet. That's so good to hear.
Yeah, and he's been with me through a lot of tough times, and he's not gonna leave. I hope. No.
Well, but just to be general about it, because it's so important to have really good people in your life, not only to support and encourage you and to be honest with you, but also, especially during this pandemic, we've had to stay with our core set of people, and we've had so much more time to ourselves. What is it about your relationship now that you really appreciate that makes it healthy and loving?
Honesty. So important, and to have like a conversation about everything, because we're two completely different persons and we have different baggage, we have different experiences, but it's so important to just have a conversation and being able to actually speak your mind and having arguments and being respectful towards each other, and we can meet somewhere in the middle. And yeah, it's a very loving and respectful, we are who we are, and we're not trying to change each other. We're just trying to be two people who live side by side, but like we're different. That's what's beautiful.
It sounds like you have a real respect for each other. And I could sense you have the freedom to be who you truly are without having to hide certain parts of you. And I think that's the great thing, is if you're in a relationship with someone who truly accepts all the things that you like about yourself and the things that you don't like about yourself, you know, that really is acceptance.
That is acceptance, because I've been with people who tried to change me and who made me feel that there was parts of me that wasn't worth to love, you know? And when you go through those kinds of experiences, you're starting to questioning yourself. And you think that, okay, this is what I deserve. But then it's not fair. You just got to find someone who loves all parts of you.
Right, right. And, you know, you dropped a new song called Old Insecurities. And we all have old insecurities that we sometimes carry into our adulthood. Maybe something that was said when we were a child. And it still bothers us. Is there anything that you could think of an old insecurity that you still carry from way back when?
For me, there's a lot of different aspects of that. Like, one thing for me is that I'm scared that people will leave me, or that I'm not good enough, or that I'm too much, or maybe I'm too little. You know, there's so many different things. Do you have something?
Actually, I was really shy when I was growing up, super shy. Like, I would walk home with my friends and not say one word. And yeah. So it was really hard for me to break out of that. But I do find like my shyness will come out in different ways, where on the outside, it seems like I'm very social, I'm very comfortable, and people say, oh, wow, you can go and talk with all these different people. But on the inside, I could be really nervous. And I was wondering about that with you, because when people first see you, they can get an impression of you. But then your idea of yourself is probably different from what people see when they first meet you. What is the difference between what people see on the outside versus how you see yourself on the inside?
Oh, there's always so much. You only see like the little top of the mountain with people. That's so interesting. I was a very shy child as well. When people see me, I don't know, actually. That's hard. I don't know what people think about me. I'm trying to not think about that too much. But I don't know, maybe they think that I'm not as funny or loving or something. I can look sometimes, maybe won't be the person who's smiling all the time or taking up that much space in a room. So maybe if they speak to me, they will get a different impression that I'm more warm or funnier, I hope.
Yeah, like I see you in your music videos, and of course you're all put together. And you are natural beauty, first of all. It doesn't look like you really need much makeup at all. But when you go and have your music videos, you seem very confident. You're talented, and you know, people don't see the insecurities and the anxieties that we might have on the inside.
Yeah, that's true. People probably think that I'm a lot harder. You know, I'm not a hard person at all.
Well, you know, we talked about the pandemic, and we're slowly returning back to life. What is something that you're going to miss about the pandemic?
I think we all will appreciate just taking breaks from things, because it was so important for everybody to reset and just being able to take that time with your family. Because I went to Sweden for a couple of months, and I spent 2 months with my mom and dad. And that's something that I don't know when I can do that again. So yeah, that's something that I will definitely take with me, and how important it is to just take that time for yourself to reflect and take a break. I think it's important. What about you?
I agree with you. I know that there were so many changes that were happening in 2020, politically, personally, so many changes, right? Musicians having to cancel tours and not knowing when they could go back and do live shows. But I do really appreciate just the time at home, because I'm not that person that really stays at home, but just doing things like playing cards, ping pong, and cooking. And these are things that are simple pleasures that we miss because the outside world distracts us with so many different things that we lose the foundation of what really can make us happy. Those are things that I hope to continue even after life opens up.
Yeah, I agree. I'm so tired of staring into the phone all the time. I'm getting tired of myself because I'm addicted. I'm so addicted, you know?
Well, that's a good thing to bring up, actually, because social media is addictive. And sometimes we can rely on it. But on the other hand, it could also be dangerous to our mental health.
oh yeah, you see all these perfect people online. It's so dangerous. It's so sad. And like all these young people looking at social media and growing up with those standards of beauty, that's sad. Because they're going to think that's reality. And it's not. You're putting on all these Instagram filters and it makes you look a specific way. And then they think that's how they're supposed to look like. It's sad.
It is, because it's not reality, but it's easy to think that it is because we see it so much every day and we don't think about all of the filtering that we do every time we post something. And we usually try to post our best selves, but there's so much of our life that really is confusing or messy or difficult. And that's the part that a lot of people try to hide. So that's why I'm super thankful for you that you've spoken out on your mental health and panic attacks and anxieties, because it's so important for people to know and to understand. Is there anything else that you would like to say about mental health or about your career as an artist?
No, it's all a journey. For anyone who's going through something super hard in their life, it's important to just hear that you deserve, and you will find that light again, and just hold on, and hopefully they will find some kind of peace in my music. You know, I don't know what's gonna happen in my life. It's a journey. So for me, it's been so beautiful and so healing to create art and making something out of all that pain and all the beautiful things too, of course.
And you're right, it is very healing to hear really honest words, because those are the words that really connect with your fans and have them understand that they're not alone, and also that there's hope for recovery and so there's a better life out there.
There is.
Thank you so much, Wynonna. I really appreciate you speaking with me today.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. That's important. And you're doing something very beautiful.
Next up, we have Emmy Award-winning composer and multi-platinum selling producer, Richard Wolff, who speaks on how music, mindfulness, and meditation can calm your anxiety and improve your life with tips from his book, In Tune, Music as a Bridge to Mindfulness. Having recently conducted a workshop for Music Cares and the Recording Academy, which hosts the Grammy Awards, Richard Wolff also teaches a class at USC on music and mindfulness. Now let's hear expert Richard Wolfy Wolff share his knowledge and his solutions.
We talked to Wynonna Oak, and she had panic attacks and anxiety. And Wynonna mentioned that meditation was a way for her to relax and lessen her anxiety. And your book was actually called A Manual for Achieving Calm in a Tumultuous World. I wanted to start with something that you mentioned in the book, which I thought was really interesting. You called the four horsemen of the musical apocalypse as anxiety, depression, addiction, and suicide. And I was wondering, what has been your personal experience with these four horsemen?
Certainly can attest to two of the horsemen, which would be depression and anxiety. And I'm no stranger to panic. As a matter of fact, it was a panic attack that I had, which had all the symptoms of a heart attack, which really motivated me to finally get a hold of this whole problem of extreme anxiety. And the way that my therapist recommended was, he prescribed 10 minutes of meditation in the morning and 10 minutes of meditation at night. And I have been trying since I was a teenager. I started in Zen when I was 16, 17 years old, but I wasn't very good at it. But now the therapist is saying, hey, you want to get healthy, this is what I'm prescribing for you. And I decided I better learn as much as I can about this and finally get to do it.
I wanted to start with the basics, because I myself have tried meditation and I don't think I'm doing it right. What are the basics of meditation and what are the benefits we can receive from it?
The only thing you're not doing it right is saying I'm not doing it right. Because meditation is a process. So if you're practicing an instrument, you make mistakes. That's part of practicing an instrument. It's part of how you learn, how you grow. So if you're meditating and your mind wanders, that's okay. That's expected. It's the human mind is going to, every few seconds, jerk you around. That's just the way it is. And you learn to accept that. And accepting that and being able to be okay with that, that's meditation. That's the heart and soul right there. So the next time you're trying to meditate, you find the monkey mind is chattering away. Instead of saying, I'm not doing it right, you say, well, I realize that my mind is chattering away. And that realization is part of meditation. That means you are meditating.
The whole concept of meditation, is it to quiet our minds and clear our minds and give our minds a break? Let's say when I go for a walk out in nature or in my neighborhood, which has got a lot of trees, I'm out there with my dog, and naturally my head clears. And when it relaxes, all of these wonderful messages come, and all of these problems that I had seem to get solved by these ideas that start to flow through. Is that almost like meditation?
It's a wonderful thing. Psychologically, it's been proven to be very therapeutic to be in nature because we are nature. So we're uniting with ourselves. We're reinforcing the best part of ourselves. And when people ask, is that the point of meditation? But it's like asking, what's the point of music? Music has a million different genres and then subgenres, right? You can have hip-hop, within that you have trap. So meditation is the same thing. It's a spectrum. And you can get to so many different states of mind that most of them, if not all of them, are beneficial. But they're different. There's mindfulness, there's concentration, there's insight, there's pure awareness. And some people just want to meditate to calm down. So you mentioned that. And that is a legitimate result of meditation. It does tend to calm people down if they do it consistently. But it isn't the end all. It's a great big spectrum with many genres and subgenres.
You combined music and mindfulness and meditation, and this book is all about your brand of putting those all together. How would you explain the core foundation of your book?
Because I am a lifelong musician. The way I had to approach learning how to meditate and actually make it an integral part of my daily life was as a musician. That's the only way I know how to be. You mentioned I'm not doing it right. Well, that was my problem too. If you just stop saying that, like when I play the piano or guitar and I make a mistake, I don't say I can't do this, I'm a lousy guitar player. I just do it again. I have faith that with practice, I'll be able to get through the piece okay. And when I applied that faith, that dedication and trust and confidence in practice to the practice of meditation, then all of a sudden it started to work. And the deeper I got into it, the more correspondences, bridges, I call them, between the disciplines of music and meditation and music and mindfulness became more and more apparent. And it just strengthened and reinforced my willingness and confidence to do the practice.
I understand that you have a lot of music-based exercises in the book that people can practice and incorporate in their own life. After doing it for so long, how did that positively affect your anxiety and depression?
If I was alive right now and hadn't been practicing, and I would probably be in an institution. I can't conceive of my life without the practice of meditation. The panic is still there. They don't go away, but you're able to create space to give yourself room so that you're not enslaved by your thoughts, by your anxious feelings. And it's just like playing an instrument. You know, you practice it, you do it. And you start to condition your body. It's not just a mental thing, and it's not just an emotional thing. It's all of it. It's a harmony of mind, body, feeling, all working together in harmony to be able to see how your thinking and how your mind works, understand that, and have some critical distance between whatever is happening and your reactions to what is happening. So that makes it possible to not only know when anxiety is going to turn into panic or depression is going to go to another level, to see that ahead of time and to be able to manage it, to be able to put it in its place. And that's a physical reality. Your body almost tells you, calm down. Your body tells you, hey, you're alive in this moment. Be aware and have some pleasure in your aliveness instead of focusing on this negative feeling and thinking.
That's really interesting because things like panic attack and anxiety can happen at any time. We can be triggered by different things. I've had musicians tell me that they've had panic attacks on stage and they've had to work with their mind to get out of that and get back to performing. I mean, are there any tips that you can explain when anxiety or an attack starts to come up? What do we do at that moment? What are some things that we can do?
The caveat is there is no substitute for training. Just like playing an instrument, it's no substitute for practice. So if you're training yourself to watch your breathing, for instance, channel your attention into what your body is doing while you're breathing, and you do that on a fairly consistent level, when you're facing what you think is a threat, you can just focus on your breathing. And that will slow down your physiology. That will slow down your sympathetic nervous system, which will calm your mind automatically. It releases the relaxation response. So that's got to be the foundation. However, there are other strategies you can use. I mean, if you frame your anxiety as not your enemy, but as your friend, why? Because anxiety is there to protect you. It's there to tell you there's danger or there's a threat. What's the anxiety when you're performing? Well, you're going to make a mistake. You're going to look bad. You're going to look like a fool. Well, the anxiety is there to protect me. And I appreciate that. And I'm taking that energy of a threat, of fear of this threat or failure. I'm going to take that energy and just make it more fun to perform. Just make it more fun to do what I have to do and give me the strength to do what I have to do. Take that anxious or panic power and use that positively.
Oh, so it's almost like turning it around into something that might have been looked at negative and then saying that this is something that can empower me on stage, that I can release this in a, maybe an entertaining way. And then you also mentioned about breathing. Because Wynonna also said that she's learned breathing techniques to help relax her. And it's amazing at how breathing, just a simple act of breathing in deeply, can relax your mind and your body.
That's absolutely right. It's all interconnected. If you're focusing on your breathing and you say, okay, that's slowing it down, you slow everything down. Hey, slow down your roll. You don't need to get so high strung. Loosen up a little bit. And that's what it does. It loosens you up. You're not so tight. You're able to be a little more calm. And that takes training. And she's right. That's so essential. We don't think of breathing much because we never pay attention to it unless we're meditating or singing or doing something that requires breathing. But when we do practice being aware, having our mind and breathing together, it makes a big difference.
I've had quite a few musicians talk about the stress that they have. Oftentimes, they put the pressure on themselves that they have for perfectionists way of looking at things, not wanting anything to go wrong, and then putting that same perspective on other people on their team, you know, on the crew. And that, you know, just gets to be something very irritable because essentially we're going to make mistakes no matter how much we practice or rehearse. What is your perspective on this whole idea of trying to be perfect or trying to make it so that nothing goes wrong? I mean, you've been in the business for so long.
It's the catch-22 of being an artist. It's because you want your art to be as good as it possibly can be that you need to find the balance. It's, as with many other things in life, it's about the middle way. It's about finding a balance between perfection and then letting it go. Finding that sweet spot where you say, okay, I've done the best I can. You know, I remember when I first started to do remixes of records, starting with the members of New Edition and Bell Biv DeVoe, I was in a situation I'd never been in before in terms of, we need this record tomorrow. And so you didn't have time. You don't have time to be perfectionist. So these deadlines are doing you a big favor because you got to get them out. A lot of times if we don't have the deadlines, then we could just wallow in our desire to be perfectionist. So it comes back to being able to let go, being able to do what Leonardo da Vinci said. He said, I never finish a work of art. I just abandon it.
Yeah. I mean, deadlines are important because as artists, you could forever keep trying to perfect something and it never seems to end because there's so many ideas out there. Now, you talked about these music-based exercises for mindfulness in your book. Can you give me an example of one of those?
Yes. In terms of meditating, certainly a lot of us have problems just sitting and they tell you, follow your breath. So how do you follow your breath? Some people say, you count your breaths from 1 to 10. When I sat down to meditate, it was hard for me to focus on counting my, you know, the breathing 1 to 10. Well, how do musicians count? You count beats and bars. So you count 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 2, 3, 4, 3. So I started to count breathing as a musician would count playing a piece of music. And that's called, I call that rhythmic counting. And I find that over the last 5, 6 years, teaching different repertoires of meditation techniques, that's one of the most popular techniques for musicians is rhythmic counting. Very simple. Then we go a step further and we add tones to the counting. And there's certain patterns of tones that we add. So there are all these exercises with different intervals and different ways of adding tones, and using rhythm and harmony and melody to count the breath.
Now, the music part of it, do you incorporate the music during the meditation?
Yes.
How does that work?
What you do is you hear a tone, whatever comes in your mind, and then as you inhale, and then you hear a related tone as you exhale. So you are hearing the tone, and sometimes you're listening to your breathing, just like you listen to music, and you are making the music with your breathing. So yes, you are listening. This is your own inner music that you are composing.
Now, mindfulness is also a part of the whole repertoire of meditation and mindfulness and music. Can you tell me what is your definition of mindfulness and an example of mindfulness that you do in your own life?
Yeah, so when we talk about mindfulness, it starts with concentration. So you're able to focus or tune in to one direction. That's how it starts. And all the mindfulness trainings that I know, they all start with concentrating. And your object, the concentration, is usually breath. Number two is sounds. And so when you're tuning into one direction, now what happens is you're tuning out all the other stuff. You're tuning out the turbulence and the preoccupations and the fixations. And you're able to focus in an undistracted manner. Now, of course, your mind will wander. It's not perfect. You're going to lose your focus. It's okay, because at some point you're going to bring it back. So that's the concentration. You are developing a skill now to see things in a relatively undistracted way, which is very calming, because you're not going in a million directions anymore. Your monkey mind isn't pulling you in every which way. You're not going bonkers with this stuff. You're just focusing in one thing. And which is why, you know, if you're just listening to a piece of music or you're watching a television show, that's calming too, because you're not preoccupied with all the turbulence in your mind. What mindfulness does is it takes that ability that you have now developed to focus on one direction and to move that attentiveness to all the points in mindfulness, which means that whatever comes across your field of experience, you're able to see that and observe it in a relatively clear, calm way, just as you were when you were focusing in one direction. So now you've developed the ability not to be so in the movie, but to watch it. Now, as you know, if you're watching a movie, you can always realize if you're wrapped up in it, so, hey, it's just a movie. And you're able to control the situation in terms of your own reactions better than if you were in the movie. So in mindfulness, you're more like you're watching the movie. You're not entangled in the storyline. Some people call it unentangled knowing, because you're knowing what's happening, but you're knowing it in such a way that it's not totally dominating your way of thinking and your feeling. To go back to the musical analogy, when you practice or rehearse with your band, that's like developing mindfulness in meditation. Now, same thing with a musician that's practicing their instrument, or they're playing with they're rehearsing with the band. Now you got to go out and perform on the world stage. Ah, that's mindfulness. That's taking that ability that you develop rehearsing and using that to perform on the world stage. You took that skill in meditation, and now you apply it to your life. Now, how do you apply it to your life? You're in a situation in a relationship with somebody, and there might be a difference of opinion. There might be a conflict there. Well, when your mind, you're focusing on what they're saying, right? Not on your reaction to what they're saying, but you're focusing your attention on what they're saying, and you're trying to hear what they're saying and what they're not saying. You're not responding to it right away. As we say, you're watching the movie. Now you're ready to respond in a way that's a little more calm and a little more clear because you're watching it from a distance. When it's up here, it appears to be a big problem. When it's out here, it's much smaller and something you can see it better. You can see the whole picture better. And that's a way to apply mindfulness on a day-to-day basis.
When you look at a musician's lifestyle, which you've seen all your life, what do you think are the conditions that probably cause the highest level of stress?
I think the deck is stacked against musicians in terms of having mental stability. You know, people will tell you that the right hemisphere of your brain, which is the creative part of your brain, is also the part that's most susceptible to negative thinking. So if you're creative, especially in a musical way, you're going to be more vulnerable, more sensitive than most people. And therefore, they feel pain more acutely than most people. And that's a problem. So how do you deal with the pain? Some people try to kill it with alcohol, kill it with drugs. Meditation, mindfulness, you don't try to kill it. You don't try to push it away. You try to live with it. You try to coexist. Coexistence is one of my favorite words. That's a way to get through this life in a positive and productive way, is to learn how to coexist with the pain that you feel. When you're making music, it's a high for many different reasons. And one of the biggest reasons is you are going beyond yourself. Some people say everybody wants is connection beyond themselves. And when you're making music, you're going beyond yourself. It's not about you anymore. It's about the music and how the music is connecting on a transpersonal level. And Alicia Keys said, when I make music, it's like I'm ascending somewhere beyond the stars. It's a high. Well, when you're not making the music, then what happens? And you crash. You got to climb down off the high, climb down off the stage. And now you got to face life. And you miss that high. Where are you going to get that high from? You don't have it anymore. And your whole sense of purpose. What is my purpose if I'm not on stage? I have no purpose anymore. And people look for drugs. That'll make them high for a while. And others look at other things, belief in God. Sometimes that'll make people high. And also meditation. That's not only a way to handle anxiety and develop mindfulness, concentration, but it is a route to having pleasures in peace and just the joy of being alive. Finding joy, and some people say bliss. And that is a thing.
A big thank you to our musical guest, Winona Oak, and our mental health expert, Richard Wolfie Wolf. For more information on Winona Oak, visit winonaoak.com and visit Winona on her socials at Winona Oak. Stay tuned for a clip of Winona Oak's single, Old Insecurities, which we'll be playing soon. For more information on Richard Wolf and his book, In Tune, Music as a Bridge to Mindfulness, visit richardwolf.net. And follow Richard on his socials at Wolf in Tune. So until next time, be brave, ask for help, and be persistent in finding the mental health that you need. I'm tired of me. I'm tired of me.
I try to be somebody else. I'm not okay, I'm not okay, and I can't blame somebody else. So let them come for me, old insecurities. I've been scared of going under.
Check Your Head Podcast is kindly supported and partnered with Sweet Relief Musicians Fund, DBSA San Gabriel Valley, Earshot Media, and Lemon Tree Studios in Los Angeles. Visit checkyourheadpodcast.com, where we have over 100 solutions for mental health. Be our friends on social media at Check Your Head Podcast. Watch us on YouTube and support us with a kind donation on checkyourheadpodcast.com. Check Your Head Podcast is sponsored by a 501c3 nonprofit, with all donations being tax deductible. Thank you for your support, and thank you for listening.